Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Ag Uncensored with your host, Nathan Filiti, right here. And today I have a colleague in Paul Shrimp that's been a part of many things, precision ag specific and ag tech, and definitely from the media end and marketing end for, I'll say decades. But Paul, thanks for being on here and spending some time with me and talking about ag technology. But tell us about yourself a little bit so the viewers or listeners know what your deal is.
What is my deal? Well, I went to school for journalism. I'm a city kid, grew up in Cleveland, I'm a lifelong Clevelander, still here. Ag tech and agriculture overall was probably the furthest from my mind. Actually had a job in sales for 6 years in selling conferences, and then came into turf and ornamental. That was my first job in trade press, was writing for turf and ornamental publication. So I got to ingest some of what was going on in agriculture, but obviously at a completely different level. Also pest control, and worked in that until 1998, got a chance to shift over to agriculture when I joined what was then Farm Chemicals magazine over at Meister Media, and that became Crop Life magazine later on in 2002. It changed names and forged forward. About that same time, we acquired the Precision Ag brand from Elliot Nels and the folks over at Clear Window. Elliot's probably a name a lot of the aficionados know or knew from a past life. He's brought over the brand, brought over a lot of expertise, and we went at it pretty much whole hog from there. It became my project, my personal mission to learn about technology and agriculture, and also covered the retail distribution channel. The manufacturing side, you know, really the value chain all the way through. So, yeah. I covered all that stuff. And so that's really been, you know, that has earned me a very successful career. I mean, ag's been great to be in. People are fantastic. You know, when I first few visits, I went to retailers and I'm like, I'm stupid. I have no idea what's going on. Please tell me how this operation runs. And everybody was super. So as you come to ag with humility, people are very welcoming and willing to tell you everything that they're doing, which was fantastic. And so that was a great thing. I think the fact that I was coming from the city and not understanding anything, I think was a benefit to me at the end of the day, because I got to ask a lot of questions. I wondered why things were the way they were. And sometimes they made sense and sometimes they didn't, but at least it gave me a little bit more than, I didn't just accept things. I was always asking, well, why? Well, why the heck would you do that? And there was always interesting answers to those questions. But so really covered that. We had the Precision Ag Survey. I worked with Purdue and Bruce Erickson over there on the Purdue Precision Ag Survey, and Jay Eckers before him, who's president of the whole shebang over there now. We took that through, and Meister continues to do that survey with Purdue as well. And then the conferences that we do, we started the Vision Conference. We partnered with InfoAg for a long time and then started Tech Hub Live a few years ago before the pandemic. And, you know, numerous little small events along the way, big data and technology, kind of local things that were kind of came and went as the different flavors of the technology month, so to speak, came and went. So, it's been quite a ride. Today, I'm working independently as a communications and marketing professional. I do some consulting. I also have a contract with Ag Gateway as their marketing communications director, which is a great way for me to get involved in something that I used to write about. And we can talk about that a little bit later, but it was definitely, it's been interesting, and it provided a different perspective on what it takes to make technology adoption and standards stick.
Well, that is a very storied and interesting past, and I suppose we can dive into it a little bit here. And definitely, and like you said on the Ag Gateway stuff, although I'm not going to pressure you to get all technical on that, as that is a many large elephants in a room type conversation. So yeah, I mean, and it a lot of this goes back for me just kind of remembering, and I suppose this is actually a little bit before, but the first InfoAg conference ever I was at in Champaign, Illinois, and I always kind of just remember that. Of course, it was a whole different, like you said, things kind of evolved, and Meister got onto it, and it just that whole world. I mean, that's kind of how I got to know you, just going to these, you know, you hear you write, but then meet you at the shows, and everyone, you know, has a fun time later in the night where all the real business happens,
Yeah,
the cocktail
absolutely.
hours and whatnot. But maybe, you know, from you getting into that, because I think it's interesting to point is, you know, the last, I'd just like to say 10 years of all this money and investment coming into ag has been kind of crazy and wild, and you've covered a lot of that. But maybe let's back up a little bit, and for when you were kind of getting into it and seeing how all the pieces were evolving, and talk through kind of what your experience, you know, especially from your end writing about it from, you know, countless different groups that you wrote about it, but not as many as there are today, of kind of how you were seeing things, and how groups were trying to reach out, because it's a little more, I don't know, maybe it's more backwoods approach of how to get all this technology out in the early days, beyond some parts of it that just kind of, I don't know, you could say marketed themselves, like Autosteer and things like that. But just curious on, you know, from when you first got into the technology side of ag, just what that looked like in the progression of that in your eyes.
Well, I at the time I didn't realize it when I was coming in 98 and 99 was the impact of the dot-com boom, right? So you had, and they're a company. I mean, John Deere, you know, with Vantage Point, they probably would rather forget about that. But I think the what was really interesting about that is I already knew they saw the internet, they saw GPS, you know, a GPS coming along that was going to be free and open and accurate, as opposed to, you know, when we used to have differential correction, you know, and microprocessors getting more powerful and computing getting smaller. I mean, they could see the power of that. Nobody was ready for it yet, but the companies have been mulling this over for a long time and trying to figure out how to get all these things integrated. And those three pieces, to me, you know, coming in 98, that was the big monster, was how are these things going to come together? How quickly are they going to come together and mesh? And then, you know, as luck would have it, you know, you start having the dot-com bust, and all of a sudden, you know, you start seeing, you know, when Rockwell had their vision system, and suddenly they just completely pull out of agriculture and get, you know, that happened shortly after I was really getting into it. And then you started really seeing a retraction in investment overall. And I was like, okay, maybe this is a short-lived endeavor. Maybe I'll focus on the retail side. But you know, there were some dry years there. I mean, InfoAg, you know, in 01 and 03, I mean, those were some really difficult years. We had, you know, we're getting 300-400 people coming to those events at that time, and it just was, you know, we were involved in the marketing side. We didn't produce it. That was still Quentin Rund and Harold Reitz and those characters that were putting the conference together. But you know, you didn't really know what was going to save it, right? We were kind of like, what's going to be the next thing that brings technology around? And of course, Autosteer started coming out, and then you know that kind of starts the next interesting wave, which to me is pretty productive wave. As you said, you know, Autosteer was pretty automatic, but if you recall in the beginning, you know, you had Trimble and these systems that were fantastic, triple redundancy, really well done, but also hundreds of thousands of dollars. Or, you know, there was a, you know, not everybody was going to be able to adopt this technology. And then you had someone like an Outback come along and start putting kits into retrofitting, you know, retrofitting kits into existing machinery. And it didn't cost a lot of money, and it gave folks that exposure to this auto steer technology, and suddenly everybody wanted it. It was a real game changer. And then you had Easy Steer, and you had, you know, all the companies started weighing in with, you know, these smaller retrofit kinds of systems that would fit onto existing tractors. And it occurs to you that that's really what farmers want, right?
Yeah.
They have this system.
Well, that in Bragg, how straight their rows are to their neighbors. And I just remembered some of those early days, people would be like, there'd be old, you know, grandpa sitting at the coffee shop saying, oh, I can drive straighter than that computers and the cab and all that. And then they'd actually get in there and be like, oh, wow, I'm not as exhausted anymore. And I can just kind of sit back and enjoy the view. And even it changed all mindsets of farmers very fast, something that is rarely happens. I mean, Roundup Ready is and you know, and some of those traits are similar, but those aren't necessarily as push button, literally push a button, drive up and down. It just, and to this day, it's still, I mean, if you don't have it, what's the point in a sense, it feels, and you can get systems for so cheap. And, but yeah, to your point, like, that was the thing that was needed to kind of, something needed to boost the industry to make it feel like, oh, there's something here. It's not just smoke and mirrors.
Yeah. I mean, the farmer has to see that it's beneficial and it had experienced it. You know, I don't know what your first experience with it was, but you know, I was still relatively new and hadn't done a lot of driving other than, you know, test driving at, Maggie or on conferences. But, I happened to be with someone who introduced me to a farmer. I'm like, he had just had an early auto steer. I think it was a Beeline system. And he said, he asked me if I'd done this before. I'm like, no. And he's like, come on in. And it was tillage. So it was even worse, you know? So he puts me in the cab of this thing. He says, okay, I want you to hold on to the wheel and I want you to steer. You know, like, okay, let's go. You know, I'm like, so farmers did this for like 10, 12 hours plus a day. I mean, really, you're as a city kid, mind blown. So then he says, okay, now I'm going to engage the auto steer. And you let go of it. And you're like, okay, that's reason one. I mean, that's not reason two or three or five. You know, the agronomic reasons are great. But reason one is, you know, guess what? You know, as I talk to farmers, you know, maybe dad can go in and do that where he couldn't do it before. He was just, you get too exhausted holding onto the wheel and trying to steer, he could actually be engaged in a farm again. It just like that meant a ton. That cultural change, that cultural difference made a big difference as opposed to, you know, my rows are straight and that's great, but guess what? Rows are straight and anybody can drive it who gets trained on it and it keeps the rows straight. So that was some of the things I thought were particularly interesting in auto steer, and then it begat all the other stuff, you know, the row, you know, nozzle application, all the things that happen there, you know, turning rows off on automatic shut off and turn on. All that stuff really took us through, you know, the aughts, you know, until we got to, you know, the big Monsanto explosion. So,
when people thought software was started. Some people think it's when software started an egg.
But so
I'm not
so
even
yeah,
kidding
so
when the, I say that. But.
So that I think was a really, you know, but a lot of that stuff was about efficiency, right? It was about efficiency and comfort.
Yeah.
It wasn't necessarily about agronomy. It was great that you were auto shutting off and you were doing that. You know, environmentally, it was a real positive, and not having to overlapping and do no skips, no overlaps, et cetera. But you know, the efficiency and comfort was really the big draw from everyone that I talked to and experienced. And that's really what that's a lot of what it's about, is you're fitting a system into an existing agronomic plan program. the existing equipment that I have. I mean, a lot of things you see, just they ask you to, well, you get, if you buy this and you add this and you add this and you add this, and you do this different thing and you do that different thing, or you add this row, you add this pass, or you change this pass, or you double up on this, and then you're just, okay, you're asking me to change something that I've done for years and years. You know, this is going to impact a lot of different things. You know, it's no wonder that if you're not working through all those things, all those changes, and appreciating what, you know, and I think Swain said this a little bit in his interview, was you know, if you don't appreciate all those different changes, you're probably not going to get a lot of conversion. That makes it extremely difficult to get people to adopt technology. So that was a key thing. And I remember, you know, I remember, of course, climate and everything that happened there, but I remember distinctly going to, and stop me if I'm getting boring, but going to Farm Progress show and, walking into the Monsanto booth the one year, I think it was 2013-ish, and looking at the corner and seeing Julie Labonte, working a booth, that was field scripts, and it said something about agronomic recommendations, and immediately my eyes bugged out, made a beeline for Julie. I'm like, what are you doing? And she went on to explain exactly what they were, you know, what they were trying to do. And at the time, you know, everybody, you know, Monsanto was not the most loved company, obviously, in agriculture or elsewhere. But you had to give them their due. They made Roundup Ready work. They got growers to pay technology fees, which no one thought they would do. They had a system that was effective, and you almost had to pay attention. You had to say, you know, maybe they have something, maybe they don't, but you almost have to pay attention to it, right? So that was really, you know, a change to me was seeing that you're looking at the agronomic recommendations coming from essentially a seed and crop protection company.
Well, and they definitely highlighted out. I mean, clearly they spent, you know, a lot of marketing dollars too, I'm sure, went, you know, towards the group you were with, as that's what, and to get the exposure out and to talk about it more, which overly, you know, helped the industry, I think, you know, see and react to all the possibilities more. Though I know they weren't necessarily first to try some of those things, or maybe the first to really try it out on a large scale, which wasn't also perfect. You know, nothing is when you first start, but they put a lot of shining lights to it. I remember going to, yeah, that Farm Progress after they bought, they had their own tent just for climate field view. And there was like 200 people just roaming around with shirts on, and me and my dad were walking through and be like, holy shit, this is, they're going hard. You could tell, they were spending a couple $100 million a year trying to make their newest, latest investment into something much bigger. Of course that has changed a lot over the years, but at the same time, you know, there was other, you know, there's other core, you know, softwares in ag, you know, since the beginning. I can tell my story. I don't even need to get into it all, but you know, you look at the SSTs of the world and the, you know, Ag Leader SMS, and you know, there's plenty others, but just, you know, and they've been trying to, it is kind of weird because, you know, software has been a thing in ag for quite some time, but the usability of it for the average farmer was pretty low, just because they're complicated. They're meant for the ag retail side, and that's what a lot was marketing towards. And then there was some, I would say there were some attempts to maybe go direct to the farmer with certain softwares or certain apps a little bit before, wouldn't, you know, climate made a big push into it, but really they opened the door to that connection point with the farmers, much like I suppose you could say AutoSteer did too, is saying, hey, here's a nice little app that does these simple things that makes you see your fields in a different way, make some decisions. Maybe we can help automate some things, or hey, it's just a way to say, put your field in here and we'll tell you about how much it rained. I mean, that's kind of a lot where it started. And then, you know, they kind of trickled down from there. And I think, you know, from your point on the retrofitting side of auto steer, because that was a big point. Not everyone could buy the newest, latest, greatest thing where it was all just integrated. Not even, it took the OEMs a while to even implement that, those steering valves into them directly. But that was what I think also helped. And, you know, this is where I'll give the Precision Planting guys a lot of credit too, is for, you know, they took it one step further on the machine side, where, you know, for retrofit that dirty old planter and make it nice again. You know, it's kind of that mode in your head, is you have this, you know, you have the pickup you drove every day and it's, you know, sitting out there, but you know, you put a little elbow grease into it, a little bit of money, fresh coat of paint, maybe a newer motor or something, newer transmission, and it's like a new vehicle. And then, you know, they climate bought them, and that merging of that retrofitting side. And then here's a simple software. While it still has its complications today, and things have changed, and things have changed hands, even those are the types of things that really need to happen in the ag tech space. They need to kind of form into this glob of semi-perfection just to get attention right. And it takes a lot of effort and time and money to get people in ag's attention. And you know, to, before we got in the call, and we've spoke about it before too, is another point before that, you know, before the, you know, Roundup and genetics, one of the biggest things that ever tech wise happened in ag was something as simple as, you know, we take for granted today in the air conditioned cab. You know, that made it easier to go up and down the rows. And I think that's always a fun analogy of yours.
Yeah. I mean, it's when you think about the life-changing technologies, the real game changers. I mean, you know, think about what the power of the air conditioner gives you to update, to improve the cab. I think it's a comfort thing, but it's also all the technology you can put in. You can keep the air clean. I mean, it's just like, it's the things it begets is absolutely astounding, and it's simple, but it's pure. It works.
Well, and that's one of the tough things, you know, when I hear, you know, today is, you know, there's now thousands of different software pieces. There's more and more hardware components that ones can add and add on from multiple different groups. And I've been trying to think, you know, what is that next big thing that just is like, holy crap, this everyone wants and needs it. And it kind of changes the game. Cause it feels like every, I don't know, you could call it every 10-ish years, something kind of pops out and they're like, oh, okay, that now exists. And it's kind of hard to, it's, no one ever knows exactly what it is, but I would say right now, I mean, there maybe was this push to say, oh, it's carbon credits or something like that. Well, that's kind of fell apart. But it's, I don't know, to me, it might be biologicals, but there's just so much noise. It's way different. I don't know if that's it. Do you have any ideas of what that thing that's kind of moving around that you think could be that thing, or what's your thoughts?
Everything today is very diffuse. I mean, I think, you know, in serving on some advisory groups for conferences, you know, and asking me about it, I think that is the toughest part, is what do you talk about that's really meaningful? You know, what innovations are pretty close to coming to the farm that the folks haven't already talked to death. I mean, we've talked about, you know, we're talking about AI, we're talking about robotics and as you said, biologicals. There's things that are out there, but there's no, I don't see any home run quite yet. Yeah. I haven't seen anything that just like sparkles and says, yeah, we need, you know, everybody's going to need this. I think, I think automation is, you know, what I wonder is there an auto steer of automation? Is there someone who's going to, is there, I guess, or is there an outback of automation? Is there someone that's going to come in with something that's retrofitting that does some basic work that takes away something that someone does manually, you know, whether it's, you know, it's the whole, you know, the grain cart thing, or if it's a tender thing, or if it's something within the operation that can be done that doesn't have to be done by a person anymore. You know, I mean, that continues to be the big thing I hear, you know, hearing it, heard it, you know, at Tech Hub last year and other conferences, is that there's just so many positions that are open. You know, you're seeing more and more retirements, you're seeing more and more mergers trying to solve that problem of where do we find people. And it doesn't seem destined to go away. And in some places it's going to definitely continue getting worse, because, you know, folks aren't staying there, or there's just not enough kids being born to fill these positions. So, you know, you figure it's going to come from somewhere where it's going to be something that's going to aid, where people are just simply not available. But is exactly, well, I think what that is hard.
Well, and myself growing up in a small farm and in a small community, I mean, I didn't have a big class. I mean, town was 500 people and now it's half that, and farms are getting bigger, and it's because they can use some of these technologies that everyone's, you know, been pushing. And then, but sometimes I look back and I mean, something was destined to change anyways. People were leaving, you know, the country anyways for better paying jobs, you know, nicer things, go to a movie theater. And of course now that's changed now too. You could just watch from home for a lot of stuff, but, you know, there's a place for technology, but then there's also a place to kind of hold it back a little bit, especially I feel in the farming world, where it's like, yeah, that's like robotics is a great example. It's like, yeah, that's cool. And that's great. And I see plenty of it. I've next to this grand farm up here where they're testing all these robots and drones. And I mean, I think a lot of people thought the next big thing was drones. And I had a lot to say on that, let's just say at least, but there's also that other end. It's just like, you know, for robotics, my challenge has been, okay, that's great. But then I see, you know, some of these drone sprayers out there, or, you know, groups that want to have swarms of robots or small tractors, and it's cool and all. But then I think, okay, where are you going to get the people to actually kind of operate those things? Because they're not fully automated. You know, you still have to refill it with seed or chemical or fuel or charge the batteries. There's all these other functions. There's different functions. There are new functions of ag that exist because of new technology, but they're harder to learn. They're harder to support. And there's not enough people to support even the normal process of just getting a guy to drive a truck or a combine in the field, whether it has the latest, greatest technology anyways. So there's a limit to automation in our current form and function in ag. And I think that's why it's so hard. And yeah, maybe AI is part of that, but then what does that erode? You know, do you have an AI crop insurance agent? Do you have an AI crop banker or marketing planner? I mean, honestly, if someone could figure out an AI I know it's being worked on to, you know, do better grain marketing. I mean, that's 30-40% changes in your net income, usually just from how you market your grain. And if it was just a click of a button and just kind of did all that crazy analysis in the back, yeah, that would be a pretty big deal. I could see that, because that's a hard, the data is so insane to it. And the numbers, it's like, well, that's a perfect opportunity. But then you take away the local grain traders and the guys that work at the elevator that are doing that, and that relationship thing. we got to be careful. Yep. Maybe that's what I'm trying to say. It's hard.
Yeah. Yeah. And as you said, you talked about a little bit about consolidation. You wonder, you know, I used to ask about this all the time. You know, so many events you would have thought would precipitate a significant or meaningful consolidation among farmers that has never happened. Mm-hmm. And it's happened, but not nearly at the scale you would think. And as you said, a lot of these technologies are built for the big, you know, what would be a big operation where all you care about is production and movement. I mean, you're just about production and moving product and keeping things going, as opposed to, I love farming. Farming is a lifestyle. It's no longer, you know, because we're talking about this, you know, farming is a business and, you know, and the need for that. But, you know, what's really the support structure today from the government standpoint? It supports farming. It supports all farmers. I mean, it doesn't favor the outstanding performer, does it really? I mean, it supports everybody. If you're doing a good job, if you're doing a solid job of farming, and things don't work out for you, or you have a bad year, there are ways that you're able to pick up the pieces and carry on. And I'm not saying that makes farming easy. It certainly by no means does it. It's an extremely difficult, extremely stressful, position to be in, to be a farmer. But at the same time, if there's not enough that penalizes those who aren't making the grade, so to speak, or aren't excelling, or there aren't benchmarks for you mm-hmm. to excel more, then what's regulating it? What mechanism in the world of capitalism is making, you know, making that occur? Really, there isn't that much, or it's a fairly relatively small amount. And not that you want that. I mean, you want that to happen. I want people to throw tomatoes at me, but you know, mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of the way it is. It's not a system that's designed to change, and there's no incentive. There's sometimes not much incentive to take on some of these technologies to do something beyond the pale.
No,
I mean, so you know, when folks in technology say, well, why won't these farmers adopt? Because they really don't have to. They are, you know, they are solid stewards of the environment. They are getting solid, you know, returns for their investment. They have to look at the numbers every year. Some years the numbers are great. Some years the numbers aren't so great. And that may affect the technologies they use or their reaction to the technologies. And some things that look great last year look lousy this year. So I don't know. I'll let you kind of react to anything I said there, because that's the stuff that I used to wrestle with personally as an editor and a writer, and trying to be as empathetic as I can with the situation, encouraging, you know, adoption, but at the same time being realistic about, you know, I can't encourage, if I can't encourage these guys into a black hole, they're going to say this guy's an idiot. He doesn't know what he's talking about. So that affected me as a writer and as a, you know, as someone just observing agriculture.
I don't know. I hear that because, you know, as I've been doing, you know, dabbling in the writing and both the media thing. I mean, as I'm sitting and we're doing this right now, is one of the kind of the points of me wanting to do this and writing was to talk, to ask some of those harder questions. But sometimes it's really uncomfortable, especially, you know, I have friends and family that farm and it can get frustrating. Like, why aren't you doing this? It's right here. It's affordable. You can do it. But on the same vein, I know 100% why they don't do it. Cause I tell people this all the time is like, I don't necessarily want to do any of these things, make my funny memes about ag or write about it or go to these shows. I actually just want to farm. I just want to find my way to go back and farm. I did a little bit and I want to do more. That was the whole dream. And I think back as like, I've seen every single piece of technology that exists in ag on all different factors of it, just through going to places, talking to people. And I think it's like, well, if I did get the opportunity to farm again, I almost wouldn't want to use any of it, besides probably auto steer, because let's just be honest, I wouldn't want to be the only farmer not using an area and look like that asshole guy.
You don't want to be that guy.
Yeah, but I mean, I've been touting variable rate from satellite imagery for, you know, with my dad for since I was a kid. Literally was part of my science project that I did, and talked about it in papers in college, and like, God, it's even for me, it's like, you can get tired of it. And that's what, you know, a lot of my farming friends and my family members that are in it, that's how they feel about it all. They're like, yeah, that's great, but I just don't really need to do it. I'm making money. I'm going on my vacations. I'm doing my things. If it's a bad year, yeah, it sucks, but I still, for the most part, can do my things that I usually do. You know, there's been good years. I saved up some money or paid off some assets or whatnot. And I hear, and you said this a little earlier, is, you know, many take it as, oh, farming's a business. It's like, well, yeah, of course it is. You know, anything that you do to try to make money is inherently a business of some sort. But yeah, that statement comes a lot from, I'd say, the top 5-10 percenters of farmers, and the ones that are actually using more of the technology, because they're, you know, like, run a farm like a CEO. And I'm like, I've met CEOs of major companies and I've met farmers. And while there are some traits that exist, call it I'll say, and I have this just as much as anybody does, there's a skepticism with everything. There's a little bit of narcissistic tendencies. There's a lot of stubbornness, and you'd put a little selfishness in there too. That's just kind of how it is. I don't know, but so I see some of those common traits. But farming's way more cultural. It's literally in the name, agriculture. It's not, we can't forget that. I think in a lot of things in tech, especially lately in ag tech and all the investments and investors coming in, VCs, whatnot, you know, they don't see it that way. They haven't looked at it as a culture. They've looked at it as purely as a business. It's like, well, yeah, well, it's not. When you proclaim to everybody that, you know, when you say, well, we're helping feed the world, farmers feed the world. And I'm like, cool. Yes, inherently that is kind of part of the description of a farmer, but it's also not the full story. And sometimes marketing has gotten lost in that. And I know you've probably seen that more than probably anybody, on how many companies are trying to feed the world and how many of them are actually doing it. I guess that's a good question.
Yeah.
How many companies in ag tech that have the line feeding the world are doing it?
that has done a bigger disservice to agriculture than pretty much anything as far as marketing. And that was like the 2014, that kind of, that boomlet that came through. That was the proclamation on every website and every presentation. Actually, I put a Twitter post out and I said from now on, every time I hear someone say 9 billion by 2050, I'm going to boo. And I got like, I mean, 100 people, like, yeah, within 100%. A day, 100 people liked it. I'm like, it was just like, people were sick of hearing it. It was an excuse to, you know, it was like 9 billion by 2050. So here's your app. 9 billion by 2050. So here's your little software nugget. It was like the most absurd little, you know, nothing kind of technology that they try to release. And you're just like, really, you're going to hide behind that number and tell us that, you know, this is the linchpin for feeding the entire planet. You know, it got people excited for a little bit. It was like, yeah, this is something we got to do. But it was just like, then it just became cliche and people knew that it was going to be, what they were going to get was probably horse hockey. The next thing that came out of their mouths.
Yeah. I think the first time I even ever heard it, cause it came out with that, what is it? The World Economic Forum or something, or World Food Organization. Yeah. I can't remember. Yeah. And I just, even the first time I heard it, I was like, ugh, no, please. No,
just don't put that back in the box, back in the box.
Well, and what's so, you know, talking through it with others and, you know, to your point, you know, everyone kind of had the same thought process after a while. I was like, please just shut up about 2050. We don't even know if we're going to make it there in our political environment. That's where we sit. No matter what side of Iowa on, everyone's freaking out. And, but, you know, some of the truth to that is, and I think it's, there's parts of it that have definitely been debunked. Clearly more people are living on the planet day by day. Sure, there are food scarcities in the world, but I've been seeing a lot more lately, and some people talking about it on other podcasts or blogs, is we have an overabundance right now. Of course, transportation of food and getting it actually to people in safe and healthy ways, you know, the distribution is more of the problem. And I get that a lot, because, you know, from dealing with the data side of ag, especially with imagery, for years, it's still done today. You know, and this can be any data, it doesn't really matter. And it's like, oh, we did this process and it shows this. And so hence it can save the world. It can save this field. It can save that farmer. It can make them more money and they spend less on inputs. I'm like, yeah, okay. Yes, you are correct in that statement. But you just did one example in one area and your information came from one field. Maybe it's a biological thing. Maybe it's a new seed variety or whatever, or some analytical big data process, whatever. Scaling that and distributing that process is insanely hard to do. And it's like so much money came into ag thinking, oh, it's just a money problem, is let's get this data to here and X happens. It's like, yeah, that works good for maybe social media and things like that. But in ag, everything's different everywhere. Even, you know, from your end marketing things, I'm sure there's plenty of times you saw something that someone's marketing this where it works for everywhere, because, you know, they're feeding the world, their statement is. But most of those things work in just a very small little niche locality. And I don't really have an answer to what how to help that, but yeah, distribution of anything in ag, just because it's crucial to everyone's, you know, people need to eat. The marketing needs to get better around it. And I mean, do you think it has, from your perspective of how ag tech is being marketed now, or is it still like, what are the pros of, or the highlights that you see that it's happening, it's changed? What still sucks? And a loaded question.
It seems like folks are, to me, I think the good is, I think folks are to some degree going back to the drawing board on some of these technologies. Like you're seeing folks going back, looking for partners, you know, kind of self-examining, you know, I mean, drones kind of gone through different things where, you know, it's, yeah, I remember the first time I went to the UAV expo in Vegas, a guy came up to me, said, you know, my famous line was, I got a drone, I don't want to get into ag. Like, seriously, yeah. You're really seriously asking me that question right now. So it's, But that was like over and over again. We'd hear that. We get calls like, yeah, how do we get it? How do we get a drone in that? It's like, you don't, dude, just stop, please stop. But you see, yeah, you see technologies, you see going, you know, like, you know, things like Burrow, you know, in the robotics where they're in vineyards and they're carrying carts of food around or carts of, you know, grapes or whatever. So that, you know, you don't have people actually hauling this stuff around. It's actually robotically going to practical, you know, real practical applications of these things. That to me is going back to the drawing board and saying, you know, okay, what can we do? What can we absolutely do that will work? And that was one thing. I was really impressed with Semios. And again, it's another West Coast company. But some of the things that they were doing to putting out pheromones and pheromone puffers and, you know, measuring freeze degrees on certain crops. I mean, what they were doing is really going to the producers directly and finding out what they need and just getting, you know, going producer by producer and farm outfit by outfit and just saying, you know, what can we do in tailoring those technologies to what they needed. Now those are higher value crops and that stuff. But again, it's not you don't see as much of people producing something and just saying, okay, here, you know, just going out to market, you know, anybody that comes along. They're actually, I think you know, certain areas we're seeing more, you know, a retrenching, retargeting. You know, since I wasn't in, you probably could say more in San Francisco, what you saw. And I haven't listened to everything that you've done so far, so I don't know how much of a download you've given on that. But, you know, again, does it seem to you like we're seeing a lot? Are we going back to the future and seeing a lot more things being released that upset you, or are you?
there's always a few things that are like, oh, this again or whatever, you know, that exists. But honestly, for the most part, what I didn't hear a lot of people talk about, and this may be a good thing, because I mean, honestly, the last 10 years has been, let's raise money and build whatever and just try to do something and sell it so that we can, you know, emulate Climate or Granular or this robotic company, that robotic company. That was the only goal, like, from so many companies, is just raise a bunch of money and sell to one of the major OEMs, because holy shit, hundreds of millions of dollars. You throw 50 in, you get 500 million, you know, it's a win-win for everybody. And like, that was the concern. And now that pretty much the spigot has kind of run out, unless you got something really good, I think it's for the best. And I didn't see a lot of people just bragging and talking about the money they raised, which I've been so tired of that. Like, saw the countless press releases that were like, oh, we've raised this from this fund and now we're this, and now that's going to really help us feed the world now is this extra $20 million or whatever. And I couldn't go on precisionag.com anymore and see it, or the,
sorry.
Yeah. Sorry. You know, at the time I was trying, but, but the other ones too were like, oh, we're this company. And, you know, they're one that raised, I'll just say, hundreds of millions of dollars. And every time they signed up a new client, it could be just some podunk agronomy group in the middle of nowhere, or some, you know, small ag retailer, like, we signed them up and they're going to do this. This is a big press release. I'm like, you guys spent $500 at least on a press release to tell us that you just made a sale. Like, that's weird. Like, I get if it's a big giant contract, but knowing just the amounts that these things are, you know, $20,000-$30,000 contract, say, is not worth a press release to talk about. Like, just keep it in your pants, man. That's how I think about it. It's like, we don't you don't need to show it everywhere. Just where it's important, sure.
Yeah. I mean, some of those, you know, successes that you that people pointed to at the time, like, you know, you like AdaptN. I mean, you know, a company that's been around for almost a decade gets acquired. It's like, oh, they got acquired. It's like, well, dude, you know how much pain went into making that a viable product? I mean, it was years of struggle and research to make that happen. And that happened a few times with some with companies getting acquired. It's like, that's how it works. I mean, you need to be out there. You need to have done the homework to make sure that this stuff works. You know, I hear people say, who's, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, to that, I was just going to say is but there's an unfortunate side of that is some of the groups that have gotten acquired, because I've literally seen, you know, some of the numbers or people have shared it. It's great they got acquired, but a lot of times they only got acquired because they literally couldn't survive another month on their own, or sales dipped to a point and some of them got bought for pennies on the dollar. There's been a lot of that recently, but some of the other past ones, but of course some of them are good ones too. It's hard to read between the lines of it all, but you know, we digress.
Yeah. Some of that I wasn't as privy to in terms of the numbers. You could kind of assume that they were running out of options for some. It just was, you couldn't find anybody that was using the products, or it was the same, you know, five or six people that you knew were using it that wasn't growing at all. And so you know, when they sold, it wasn't a huge surprise. It is hard, you know, and there's so many companies that are kind of a mystery out there. What's TELUS going to do with Bragrica, and what's going to happen with FBN, and we watched FBN really closely, obviously, you know, in the retail market, that was something we were following and, mm-hmm. you know, throwing barbs and exchanging barbs at times. And it was interesting, but, you know, there was just a classic case of let's throw another log on the fire and see what happens. You know, it was just like insurance, and it was, you know, all the different things, mm-hmm. the different aspects that they added to it over and over. You're just like, so that's not working. Are we doing something new? Are we really doing something new, or are we doing something to divert? You know, and then there's the whole notion of, we have this many members. How many of these people signed up and never contacted you again versus actually, you know, are engaged with, mm-hmm. with what you're doing? It's all that stuff. It doesn't bode well for technology overall. It gives everything kind of a bad taste. And so I don't know. That's the kind of thing that continues to frost me.
That's been, you know, I did see that more at the World Agritech thing. And I've seen it more the last definitely 2 years is just this. Yeah. Okay. And then, you know, something doesn't work. And there's quite a few examples that I've, you know, made either memes about or written about, and others have too, is, yeah, there is this kind of, there was this fascination with technology coming in ag to solve all these giant problems. None really have, you know, the tried and true factors still kind of work as they worked before. A few sure are doing some good things, but then again, the amount of money that's actually made from it, it's very hard to define the ROI of just the company existing versus even what they're doing. Like, the product might be great and it can make money, but there's just not enough people to utilize it for the company to make money. But sometimes it can be vice versa, or even whatever is being touted doesn't really help anyone. It was kind of built to be built because why not? And, you know, does that happen in every technology or every industry? Yeah, I suppose. So it's hard to see it happen too. And I think, though, from what I've been seeing is, and I've been talking about a kind of a reset in it all. There's a want to try again, try better, think about the process a little more. You know, the money groups are like, hey, this has got to be legit. We can't just throw this at it because another fund is doing it for fun. It's like, oh, they are, you know, another VC is throwing in 20 or 30 and they're trying to get the next big thing. It's like, oh, the next big thing actually doesn't really exist in ag that works that way. It just doesn't work that way. The companies that have done it and bought those companies, honestly, spend more money keeping them alive, or they just throw them away or sell them off for parts. So what's the point? I think finally that realization is out there and it's like real. And so now, you know, the hard part here is going to be, there's still a lot of small companies that are, you know, got good things, but I guess they're going to have to learn the good old fashioned way that, you know, kind of how the beginnings of precision ag and ag tech, you know, happened. There wasn't really anyone investing in it, really, not many. If it was, it was, you know, tiny bits and pieces. You had to make something that worked, that was good, did its job, and you actually had to sell it and get it out to people and, you know, work capitalism how it's meant to be worked. And which I hope keeps out the wrong people, because I think some of the wrong people have came into ag thinking that. I do see it. I could see it too on the, you know, the carbon side, climate side, that's weaning off a little bit, getting a little more real. I think the biological side, they're going through that here soon, kind of a culling for the same purposes. But these, I'll say the data and software and has gone through that phase. And now it's kind of in a, let's rebuild. And, you know, the war happened. Here we are.
You said it more elegantly than I probably did. I think that's pretty much the same kind of point I was trying to make. Is that you're right. It's I think it's a good thing that we don't have a big hammer kind of looming, because you're right. People have to retrench. They have to go back and think about what works and what doesn't work. How can we make this viable in the agriculture community? How does it? You know, and who's getting the value and who's going to make money, and it's you know, it's all going to work out. You know, when you think back to, you know, you ask who's going to be the Dave Gates or who's going to be the Jeff Bezos of agriculture. I'm like, well, who's going to be the Al Myers? Who's going to be the next guy who develops a yield monitor out of his garage and tirelessly chases making it, you know, a commercially viable product and builds a company like Ag Leader? Who's going to be David Waits, who takes technology out of a university and creates a software program that becomes SST, that becomes ProAgrica? And, you know, again, these people have made friends and enemies, but you have to sit down and respect what they built and how they built it out of nothing. Yeah. I mean, do you think about precision planting? I mean, that was like going to precision planting thing was like going to church. Right. So you go to that big cutout of the soil and the seed and the singulation. And it's like, it was like going to church, and here the preachers were up there talking about it, and the believers were all around, and they organically bring people to the fold based on the results that they provided. They didn't try to ram it too hard. They just tried to show it, demonstrate it, show by success, and then get people to climb aboard slowly and be aware that it's not going to be fast because it's agriculture.
Well, and you know, to the precision planting point, I remember hearing a little more about it and actually some of that was, I mean, they're very the founders and the people around it and building that up, I mean, they were very church oriented in general. They used some of those actual kind of mindsets in it. But I think I heard, I can't even think of his name who started it again, but,
it escaped my head too. I was hoping you wouldn't ask me.
It's some big boys can look it up. Well, it'll come to me, but yeah, he took, his wife quit his job. then the kids were homeschooled and they traveled around in basically a camper, and they went to all the farm shows, and he just pushed and pushed it. And yeah, that's, and that was for years, because he created us a new little kind of seed disc, and, you know, no one sees that initially, that insane hard work and going to all the conferences and all the meetings. And, you know, it's why I kind of wanted to do this podcast too, is to, like, those things need to be talked about. And while, you know, talking about the past can be monotonous, and, you know, people can dwell on the past too much of, oh, this was done then and this was done now. And I can do it from time to time too. I mean, look at all the things that my dad tried to do with imagery and going around and getting it just to people like it and be this evangelist around it. And definitely did his part in the same way, although, you know, we're still fighting that battle anyways. But sometimes that just talking through it so that people that want maybe have more energy or have more money or more want or need, that can be that next kind of voice, they need to see and learn also why, where it started, why they even got to that point. And whether they're, whether they're made a lot of money on it, or whether they're still fighting, or heck, there's some people that aren't even alive anymore that's done some big things. But, you know, there's a history on it all. And you know, maybe you and me just need to write a book on it or something one of these days, and sell it to the 1,000 people that would buy it, you know. Probably only something like that. Oh, so
the, yeah,
trials and tribulations of precision ag,
there are amazing stories. I was lucky enough when I first started in 99, we did a millennium issue of Farm Chemicals magazine, where I was in charge of the precision side. So I went out, took a car, and just kind of drove around and met a bunch of people who were influential at the time. And, you know, the backstories that I couldn't write were just wildly entertaining. The competitive juice is flowing and battles going back and forth, people undermining other people. It was like absolute.
I got a few. I remember a few of them myself.
It's great stuff. It was great theater, but you know, it's just people. You're right. People do need to understand. It wasn't just, you know, people plunking down technologies and making a lot of money. It was hand to hand combat with marketing, especially in ag. The ones that survived really work hard. I mean, I have a fondness for David Waits. You know, I know, again, he was a lightning rod, and some loved, some didn't. But my first show, I was at International Conference on Precision Ag. And let me tell you, I sat through, like, the presentations that they had there. And I called my boss, and I'm like, I think I need to quit, because I don't get any of this stuff. This is insane. And there's all these international, like, the professors come together, and it was like the ridiculously minutia they would go to in terms of their studies that they would do. I'm like, they're just like, it's like, hang in there, it's okay. So I saw Dave on the show floor, and he took me. Dave's like, so what do you know? I'm like, I know nothing. It's like, come on in. So he sat down, and they were turning the lights off by the time we finished. He sat down with me 2 hours and went over everything. And it was, you know, some of it was, of course, you know, geared to SST, but a lot of it was just general knowledge about technology. I mean, he wasn't going to sell me anything, but he knew, you know, I'd probably be a future writer, and maybe I'd write about him at some point. But I mean, he was, you know, that kind of stuff, it doesn't go on as much as it used to. I think that there's a certain, you know, passing of the torch, passing of knowledge that mm-hmm. probably is lacking. Even if you go to, you know, Tech Hub or something like that today, it's not, you know, there are some of those, but a lot of those old timers are, you know, they've retired, they're just done. They've moved on, and you kind of got what you got. And that's okay, but there's something that I think there's some things that the next generation coming up could probably pick up from, that would be helpful.
Yeah. And you know, with it does, there is a fun story my dad has told me when I can't remember the group, somewhere down south, a lot of cotton. And my dad drove down there and was in the, you know, meeting room and sitting, first person he met walking out the door was Dave Waits. And he said something, he's like, Lanny, you ain't got this or whatever. You know, it was competitive and other good friends and colleagues. There's more to it, like I said. And I've actually thought of, I'll have to do it on here is, you know, cause, you know, Matt came into it too. It'd be trying to get, Dave and Matt, then me and my dad on the podcast. And we could talk about what, you know, father, son, ag tech. There's like no one else that even fits. I wouldn't dare put my kid in this industry at this point in time. So we could talk through that of like how the, I mean, we have our different paths clearly, but just the dynamics of it. So would be fun. But yeah, that is, like I said, that is, I think that's important. And, you know, why you do the things you've done and, you know, I've written some of the stuff too is I just, yeah, there's so much to be told from the past that can help the future. Of course, there's a lot of things that can be done now that couldn't have been done in the past either, even if people wanted them to. It just wasn't possible. You know, some of the adoption things of just software, I mean, with phone apps and internet, I mean, we developed stuff, you know, to run off the internet way too early. You never should have done it that way, but that was kind of a way to separate yourself. And, you know, the whole, you know, apps and internet in rural areas is now, it's still tough. It's still not perfect, but it's a lot of these tech things just couldn't have been done in the past. I mean, no one wants to sit with an old iPack or whatever and write a prescription on a screen you can barely see, which literally I've used one of those programs to do just that and take the little pencil and like hit a little zone and change the rate. And like, this is awful. No one wants that. No one wants a stylus to do that in that realm. But so, okay, another point, and maybe it's going to kind of be the last point we can close up is, so, you know, talking about there's kind of this reset of things that's good in ag tech. And I it kind of hits to kind of what you're doing today with Ag Gateway is, you know, what was it around? I want to say 2013, 14, you know, craziness, money's coming in, you know, climate got sold for a bunch. It was just this excitement. It's like, everything's exciting. Like even InfoAg that year, I think it was the biggest one ever. It was like, there's like 1400 people there or something. 16. It was just,
we knocked the doors off and I think it was 15 or 16. It was crazy.
Yeah, and it was just insane. But you know, that there was that kind of first year where I don't even know how it happened. I'd have to ask some people. I can't remember exactly, but it was like, oh, this Ag Gateway is a thing. And they were doing things before, but it's like, well, now we're going to solve this precision ag equation of multiple formats and standards. We're going to try to get this going. And all these people showed up at the John Deere headquarters in Des Moines and got together and everyone's talking, everyone's exciting. And then it's like, okay, now we'll have this other meeting. And there's just all these like little follow-up meetings. And it's like, oh crap. Okay. Getting into all these other processes that a lot of us guys in the industry just weren't used to. And it's like, okay, the standards process is weird and complicated. And then it's like, oh, this takes a crap ton of time. This is really hard. And then people started kind of leaving because they're like, yeah, I just don't have time for this. They went to sell to other people that were there trying to do the same thing. And, you know, there's been almost kind of, there was a buildup and a want. Some things kind of were done and, you know, there's been progression. And now I've started slowly, and maybe it's because of you, you know, writing and doing the marketing things, there's been this more, I'll say it's been a slower buildup of what Ag Gateway's trying to do. and kind of maybe re-engage the whole standards conversation. And I've talked to some others, you know, AAM, you have ISO, you have all that stuff kind of building up. Because, you know, we talked earlier, a lot of these core problems in ag, we're like to a precipice. If we can't all communicate, have these base infrastructure pieces, that we just can't go much further. Adoption can't get much better. It just can't. There's a hard limit. So maybe speak to that a little bit, not necessarily the technical aspects of it, but get in, what is the message now?
Well, I think, you know, and as I said earlier, to me, it was, you know, to make this changeover and kind of champion what Ag Gateway is doing is because I saw those same kind of limitations. I saw, you know, even in my writing and in technology and doing the conferences, that we're running into that same last mile conversation. We have to make these things interchange. We can only go so far if the data isn't rock solid, isn't transferring across equipment and across mm-hmm. systems seamlessly. And so in getting into this now, into my third year here, it's definitely a process. I think what they're trying to do now is break these really large problems into, I would say, manageable chunks that working groups get after. Right. So we're just going to build one accomplishment on top of another. And you're not going to see a lot of publicity about individual accomplishments within those working groups, but eventually we'll get to a point where we can release something that's meaningful. So I think, you know, certainly not over promising, but trying to deliver in pieces that move the needle a little bit at a time. I think some of the frustrations with Ag Gateway were, there'd be a lot of discussion about the same kinds of issues. The meetings would just kind of run into each other, and we'd rehash and then go away and come back and have to rehash those same issues again through the old structure. The new structure with meetups that identify the problems, working groups that say, you know, we're going to do, you know, 6-8 weeks, we're going to work on this, and we're going to come up with, at the end of this process, we're going to have something that builds on what exists. Then continue that process moving forward. I mean, we're about a year, a couple of years into that, and that seems to be working now. So that's really the message, is that we are chunking away at these problems. We are, we're trying to build off of successes that we have, and that'll continue to be the case. And we're just trying to get more folks involved in the process, you know, by saying, you know, if you're interested in, you know, field boundaries, if you're interested in, you know, some of the projects that we're working on in irrigation, you know, we're getting into the dairy area right now. If these are of interest to you, come, you know, consider joining. If you join, you can get into a group a working group that's going to get something done. You'll see how this unfolds. And if mm-hmm. this continues to be of interest to you, then, you know, you can stick with it, as opposed to, you know, as you said, the impossibly long process where, you know, little things might get done, but there's nothing, you know, there's not that meaningful piece. And there was a lot of activity, I think, as you said, in that 14 to 18 time range, a lot of things were gotten after, but as you know, things ebb and flow. And sometimes mm-hmm. you have to kind of rethink, readjust how you know, the processes to get things done. Especially when you're, you know, as you said, you get past the excitement period. It's like, well, what's next? What are we doing? How are we continuing to pay that back for our members? And that's, you know, this process, they said, seems to be working fairly effectively. We've got a really good team in place. Ben Craker's been a great addition on the portfolio side. Jeremy Wilson, obviously well known in the industry and North American director, and Brent's doing a great job heading things up and kind of letting us do our thing. That's what I can tell you. And I can't say that we have, you know, there'll be announcements coming out with some things that we're working on, but, you know, we're trying to deliver what we promise and make continuous improvements in what we've got going on.
Well, and you know, to that point, there is probably the most, I mean, ag is in a whole is honestly probably the most complex industry on the planet, because there's so many pieces it affects. From, you know, my conversation I had, or my latest podcast with Carter Williams was, you know, whether we like it or not, ag heavily influences healthcare. It's like, and some would say healthcare is the most complicated industry. It's like, yeah, well, what we eat actually really affects us, and what we eat and drink and all that. And that just downtrodden into every single other industry out there in some sense. And so to create standard processes within it, while there is some, and it's been, you know, slow going, it is insanely important. So I would say to anybody, if they can, definitely get part of the ag gateway side of things. And then I guess any other affiliates or I mean, because there are other groups, you know, working within it, different working groups and different other standard organizations I know that are tied in different various ways. And it's not easy. There is nothing, just like the whole, like as we were talking earlier, just building anything in ag on the technology front or in general, but, you know, as the main focus is the ag tech side, it is not as easy as people thought some to be, to some extent. And plenty knew it was hard, but a lot of people didn't. They thought it was like, oh, there's just this piddly industry that's not digitized very well. Like the last world industry that's not fully digitized. And like, yeah, there's a really good reason for that, because just saying, like, it's because, you know, it's kind of big, it's kind of complicated. Like, every field's a little different, every farmer's a little different, every ag business person's a little different. There's just so many ways to handle it. And maybe now that realization is finally there. It's like, oh, maybe there's an in-between where we, you know, there's the paper model, but there's a little, this digital model. Maybe we kind of, we'll just slowly go at this. Cause I mean, I've told people for a long time, it's like, you know, ag really just excels in a slow kind of linear line. And there's all these, like, in between that, there's all these little ups and downs. There's not, yep, you know, that whole, here's this big uplift and then the trough of disillusionment. And then it goes like, no, it's just ag just kind of goes. And then there's all these little things in ag that just go up and down because of the weather and markets and war or something tries new, because that affects everything. Like, you can have, I mean, anytime, you know, just as an example, trying to sell imagery to people. No one wanted to buy it on really good years in ag because, like, oh, we've made too much money, we're good, we'll spend it in other things or pay off bills, buy assets that, you know, physically gain in value. And then on the bad years, it's like, oh, we don't have enough money to do this because, you know, we're poor and oh, woe is me. And it was kind of those in between years. It's like, oh, well, yeah, I could do a little more, I could try this. But those in between years, the average years never really exist much. It's either high and mighty or low and slow. I don't know. And I think that's why some of the adoption's been so hard. It's just, it's any business, it's so hard to fall into those lines. I mean, John Deere makes billions of dollars a year, and then they're like, oh, we're going to lay off these 100 workers. It's like, you guys make $5 billion a year. Well, we see in these things. And they're just trying to keep the status quo on this nice trajectory, because you can't survive if you don't.
I mean, John Deere's been around for 100 and... I just forget the number.
Yeah.
I mean, how have they survived all those years? They know how to survive the ebbs and flows of agriculture. Maybe it's laying off a few people here, it's adding a few people there, whatever it is. If they're doing it, it's probably, they probably know what the heck they're doing. They just never, there's no willy nilly. There's no, you know, there's not like a new company that's just hacking off people because they've got no way to pay them or there's no payroll. It's not, it's never that kind. It's always deliberate. generally smart, I think, from a distance. Those companies have been around forever. And they, if they've been around forever and they're in ag, they know what they're doing. You know, it was like in ag when I was as a crop life, you always knew when the consultants were coming in with bad reports, because you get the calls in June and May and June. We're going to cut our fourth quarter program. And it was, you know, whatever big company or that big company or this input or that input. And then you're just like waiting for the rest of them. It's all like, oh, no, this is a bad harbinger. And there are some companies that just like they were going to cut that fourth. If it wasn't going well, they're going to cut the fourth quarter no matter what. You're just like, you know, but we always got those kind of early warnings that said, but you got to give it to them. I mean, they've survived. Again, they've survived a long time for a reason, because they know how to negotiate the curves and the slings and the arrows. The other thing you're saying about new companies, I hope you're right. I think and that was always a frustration was the approach the company's coming in with, and maybe the not having a big bang is the best thing for this industry. Maybe the fact that there is no, and I've thought of that too. And, you know, as I'm wake up at 3 a.m, I think, you know, it's probably a good thing that we don't have a big monster looming. Cause you won't have everyone rushing to the table trying to get a piece of the pie. It's better off if we're deliberate and we're smart about what we're investing in. And we, you know, these companies get after something that's meaningful, instead of the late, you know, the flavor of the month or whatever.
Well, I think if it's really hard to do, but any companies that can, or they're trying to get into ag right now, I don't even care what they are. Yeah, they have to build themselves on a foundational rule of knowing how to survive bad years and knowing what to do on good years, because that's how farmers stay around too. That's how ag generally works. Other industries are different. And if they can't build their companies in that realm to either, you know, maybe they have to have multiple product modes that, you know, work in every area. Is like, you know, right now commodities aren't great, but they're not awful. But then the cattle industry is super high right now, and that's, you know, there's, can you create something that fills in the gaps here and there to kind of keep going? And so many were focused on one, you know, one problem. It's like, well, there's a reason why farms produce multiple crops, is they spread out the risk. Very rarely do all crops do very well in the same year. So I think that's something that the people that are in, especially the technology side, need to think a little bit. And you could have the same product, but you just maybe marketing to different types of groups. Cause I mean, on my story of the imagery side of things is, you know, same, the consultants and ag retailers and those groups. I mean, it was these ups and downs. But then we had some contracts with crop insurance companies, because those are pretty consistent. It's like there's always going to be a loss somewhere, and helping them track some of that and do some of that. I was like, okay, there's at least that is. So it's like groups need to find what are those consistent things that are just, they're always going to happen, and someone always needs your service to some degree. Where, as to your point, consultant groups and ag retailers, like, they're just going to survive the ebbs and flows because they are more centrally minded in what they're doing, and they have to follow the weather and the markets in their area. They have no choice. So,
right. Exactly.
Lots to ponder.
Yeah. Well, I'd say one other point I think was interesting to me, and I was talking about consolidation in farming earlier, was how expensive it is for farmers to expand. I mean, when you, you talk about adding land, the resources that needed to be added, you know, fairly early in the career, I didn't really appreciate the resources that would need to be added. As I started talking about, well, what would you need to try to, what would you need to get that other piece of land, or they had this or that. And it was almost a doubling of equipment, of everything. It's like, seriously? Really? That's the only, and they'd be like, yeah, that's, and so you start unpeeling the onion and you're like, okay, this all makes sense. This is why consolidation isn't happening so rapidly. This is why everyone's so gradual and thoughtful and not just hopping on stuff, unless, you know, there just isn't, you know, there may be some folks with that kind of scale out there, but there's a lot of folks that aren't, just don't have the, most folks don't have that kind of scale where they can do that quickly.
That's maybe why, most farmers I know, there's all, like I said, very early, there's this level of, there's always a level of stubbornness, because you want all these things and you want to grow in certain ways and get that new piece of land or new equipment. And you're just like, ugh, I can't. And it just is, it's annoying. So you become kind of just stubborn in your ways. And you're like, well, I guess I'll just use the old stuff, or I'll use the old ways. And you can kind of get stuck in it. And I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, farming's hard enough, right? I mean, just farming normally, and then you're going to add this other layer of stress on top of you, with these additions. I guess, you know, if that's what you live for and you're ambitious about it and you're really all in and you're ready to take that leap, but I'm not sure how widespread that feeling is.
Well, it's going to get interesting here soon too, just because of, you know, the age of farmers have gone up, and in ag in general, people, like you said earlier, there's people leaving in droves, retiring, and, you know, on the farm side, I mean, yeah, some people are dying or they're retiring and getting out, and giant land transfer is going to happen, and it's going to change a lot of things. Some good, some probably worse, I suppose. If anything, maybe, you know, to our talk earlier, is like, what's that next big thing in ag and in the technology side that expands everything or gets more people adopted? Honestly, it might just be that. It might just be all the things that need to happen for this giant transfer of knowledge and land from one generation to the next, because it's all kind of forming up into this huge chunk. And it's just all the pieces within it. But that is the mechanism that creates this kind of next big thing. And, you know, as long as the tractors don't turn on us, I guess that's probably, you know, with AI robotics, maybe they'll do a better job and they won't be stubborn at all. They'll be like, yeah, I love driving up and down this field a billion times because, you know, that's my purpose. And also to control human beings. And like, well, we can just sit around and watch and you make our food. Fine. You win.
I got enough worry with the urban overlords taking over my house. I'm not sure I want to worry about the rural overlords coming to the city and taking over my house too. That's not good.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a fun mess. Well, I think we've gone through quite a bit here, Paul, and thanks for coming on, and it's always good to talk, and I'm sure see you at some shows here, conferences soon, if I can get out of my house of children and busyness there in itself.
So you got the youngins. Mine are 25 and 30, so I don't have that kind of stuff going on. But
yeah, I would be at a lot more farm shows and conferences if they were a little older, just to kind of do all the things that I kind of like to do. But anyways, no, thanks for being on. It was good.
And absolutely. I mean, this is something you and I, like I say, you and I talked about a little bit, just in general, about what it would be great to talk about the history or to talk about, things that are going on. And I'm thrilled that you're taking it on, because it's just not something I've even had time to muster up energy for, but this is great. And you've got the youthful energy, and you've got, you know, all the body's buried knowledge from your own experiences and your dad's, and everyone else, and you know who to talk to. So I'm excited to keep hearing about keep hearing these podcasts and finding out what you got next.
Well, thanks, and I appreciated to hear that. And yeah, there's a few that I got lined up that it should be interesting. There's going to be some, more just normal everyday ones, but yeah, I just got as a note for the podcast, anyone which wants to send me free money for doing it, by all means, I'll take it. just because it's become a labor of love around it so far. So I just kind of, it'll turn into something grander as it goes, or it won't, and that's okay. But anyways, once again, thanks, Paul, for being here and for this latest edition. And thanks for everybody listening out there or watching an hour and a half. Once again, these get long, but good fun stuff in there. So thanks again, everyone, for watching this Ag Uncensored podcast with me, Nathan Politi. See you later.